It's nice to begin on time. However, people do seem to come in a little bit. So if we could take the first few minutes kind of informally, if you would like. If you have any questions you'd like to ask. Some of you were here last week and maybe tried the meditation at home for a week now. And maybe you have some questions or some concerns or something you'd like to report from the time. So while we're waiting for more people to come in, we can either sit quietly or try to talk about those things. Well, I'll take it as a compliment to my wonderful clarity that everything I said last week was so clear that there was no questions. So thank you for that. You know the story of Mullah Nasruddin? He was a Sufi minister. He would go around to different towns, kind of traveling preacher. And he would show up and showed up at his first village and first town, and it was announced that the preacher was going to give a talk, and so all the villagers came, and he got up on the podium and he said, if you don't already understand, it's pointless for me to explain. And he left. And then the next village he came to, people heard about that, so he got up on the podium and he said, and they said, I'm messing it up a little bit. Maybe someone knows the story better than me. And anyway, so then, this is what happened. They came to the first town and he said, do you understand? Does anyone here understand the real truth? And they said, no one here understands. Tell us, Mullah. And he said, well, if you don't understand, it's pointless for me to explain. So then he went to the second town and they'd heard about that. So when he asked, does anyone here understand the truth? They said, oh yes, we understand. And he said, well, there's no point for me telling you, so you already know. And so then he went to the third town and he said, and so they'd heard about this, so they were prepared. And so he said, does anyone here understand? And the villagers said, some of us do and some of us don't. And then he said, okay, well, those who understand can tell the people who don't. And he left. So now that you all understand. So welcome here to the second day of our 5-week introductory course in mindfulness meditation. And for those of you who weren't here last week, mindfulness meditation is the basic practice of learning to strengthen our attention, to learn how to pay more careful attention to what's happening in our present moment while it's happening. It is a Buddhist practice, but you don't have to take it as a Buddhist practice. You can just take it as a training in awareness and attention and presence. It is developing something which we all have, something very simple and rudimentary to the human mind, the ability to pay attention. It's not a sophisticated thing to do. It's not. It doesn't require great intelligence. It doesn't require understanding great philosophies of Buddhism or anything. It's simply waking up moment by moment to what's happening right now. And many of you might already know this, but in that it comes from Buddhism, comes from the teachings of the Buddha. The word Buddha is a title, maybe in some ways like the word Christ is a title, and it means the awakened one, the person who's awake. And this is really the central point to all the Buddhist teachings, is to be awake. The idea being that most of us don't live a life which is very wakeful. We might be awake in a kind of physical way, but we're lost in our thoughts, we're lost in our preoccupations, we're fantasizing, we're planning a lot in the future, we're lost in the past. Even if we're in the present moment is, our experience, our perception of the present moment is filtered through our biases, our desires, our aversions, our fears. And so even if you can be in the present moment, to do that, to develop the attention so well that you can actually see the present moment for what it is, as opposed to seeing it through the filter of our bias, is a very important part of the practice. There is an ancient folk story that maybe you've heard of long ago, before human beings had shoes. There was a king or queen who went out into her queendom and one day and stubbed her toe on a little sharp rock. And she was upset by this, so she went back to court and called all her ministers and said, please, will you pave my kingdom, my queendom, with leather? And that way no one will stub the toes again. And a wise minister came up to her and said, I have a better idea. Rather than paving your kingdom with, carpeting your kingdom with leather, let's just cover the bottoms of everybody's feet with leather. And this, of course, saved a lot of expense. And it was addressing the problem at the place where the problem occurs, at the soles of the feet. So the mindfulness practice kind of functions along the same principle. If we want to protect ourselves from the struggles and strifes and sorrows of life and the sufferings of life, you could certainly protect yourself by putting up, you know, the equivalent of leather all over everything, cushions, padding. Everywhere you go, they put padding and airbags, and you know, airbags of the mind, of the heart, so that you're completely protected. Or better still, you put up walls of protection, of protectiveness. We put on blinders and we don't want to look in certain directions. And there's many things you can do that are kind of equivalent of just covering the whole show. What we can also do is understand where the point of contact is. Just like with the point of contact with the feet is, or with the ground is with the feet. So the point of contact of where we build our whole life has to do with the moment of perception, the moment right now of contact with the world. And if we want to be protected from the world, be protected from suffering and sorrow, stress, tension, you have to understand the point of contact, where the meeting occurs, and where we build the tension and the suffering and the tightness. With there's a moment of contact with the world, perception, and then we start building elaborate reactions to it, elaborate explanations of it, elaborate theories about it. And sometimes our elaborations about what reality is like has very little to do with the way reality actually is. And the training of mindfulness is to come back to that point of contact where it all begins. And if you can see where it all begins, then you can have some. You can see where the place is to put on those leather shoes, those leather soles, or whatever. You can see the point where you can protect yourself, where you can meet life in a way that you're not adding unnecessary suffering or stress to what goes on in your life. So mindfulness practice in coming back to the present moment, to the immediacy of the present, is this attempt to come back to that point of contact before everything gets built. And maybe this is an example which I like using that can maybe illustrate this a little bit better. So I'm sitting here on this wonderful carpet, and if I look down at the carpet, I see a color. There is kind of color and texture, and I see there's some darker, grayer spots in various places. And that's a very simple act of perception, you see that. The next act of perception would be to recognize, oh, that's a carpet with some stains on it. That's a pretty innocent observation. It's what's happening. But it takes a little bit to use your memory of your memory. It takes a little bit more involved activity of the mind to recognize that there's a stain on a carpet. I see the stain on the carpet, and that reminds me that there's a stain, new stain on the carpet at home. So that's relatively innocent also. Memory arises. And then based on that memory, I begin wondering about my about that roommate of mine. How is it that roommate could have poured that coffee on the new carpet and didn't make any attempt to clean it? And matter of fact, that roommate of mine is always making a mess, never cleaning up, never doing this and that. And this person's a lousy, no good roommate. And then I remember, but you know, I was the one who chose that roommate. There were many people who came for interview, and I chose that person. And how could I always choose the wrong roommate? I always had this, you know, I always seem to have, and I'm such a bad judge of character and of people, and I keep choosing, you know, I'm really allowed, you know, I never learned those skills I needed as a child to really be able to judge people, and I'm really suffering, and this is really terrible. It's gone for years now, this kind of poor judgment, and it's embarrassing to be who I am with my poor judgment, and I hope no one notices, and so then, you know, I'm really suffering here a lot, then maybe what I should do is go do some therapy, but I can't afford therapy. And you know, here I am again, you know, I have a job where I can't support myself very well, and once again, you know, I haven't learned the skills in life, and boy, I'm really a loser, and it builds, you know. And then I say, well, you know, I've heard about meditation. And maybe you can go to, I've heard meditation is also kind of cheap, maybe. You know, you don't need a lot of paraphernalia. You know, you just close your eyes and it's right there. And so, you know, maybe I'll go learn some meditation. And then you kind of wake up. That's the point of Buddhism, where you wake up and you realize you're sitting in a meditation room looking at the carpet. The mind will take us on phenomenal trips, phenomenal journeys away from the present moment. You might be lucky in that story, the genesis, the point of contact that began the whole thing was in seeing the stain on the carpet. There was a memory that arose, which is a simple, innocent thing to do. But then I latched onto that memory. And I got involved in that memory. And the place where I could have made a difference is the point where I latched on, where I clung and got reactive to that memory of my roommate having poured the coffee. If I had woken up 10 steps further down that chain of associations and woken up to the fact, oh, you know, I'm just a lousy, no good person, maybe I would have had the clarity to have seen, you know, seen through that and not bought into it. But I might not have also had that clarity, and I might have get swept up again in another whole chain of abstractions and associations. By coming back to the beginning, sometimes we can see the very point, the moment, where our mind claps down, our heart kind of clings to what's going on. So a lot of what we do in mindfulness practice is try to come back to the immediacy of our experience so we can see where everything begins. Does that make sense? Yes?
Why do we actively block out visual perception and focus our awareness on everything else?
In meditation.
Yes.
The primary, there's no inherent, you know, intrinsic reason. It's more of a pragmatic reason. And the pragmatic reason is that there's a lot going on anyway. And to close one of our sense doors allows us to focus more carefully on what remains. With eyes open, we tend to get involved in what we see and get pulled off into that world very easily and the thoughts about it and all that. If we keep the eyes closed, we tend not to do that. Also, by having the eyes closed, we tend to become a little more aware of the inner world, where most of us are usually not so aware of. And our suffering, the point where suffering arises, is in the inner world, not in the outer world. So it helps that inner movement going in to notice. The So that's the basic reason. But if a person is familiar with other meditations where they keep the eyes open, it's fine to keep the eyes open. There's no mindfulness can be developed in any way. If what you find, for example, in the Zen tradition, they sometimes have a teaching that it's very important to keep your eyes open in meditation, because then your meditation is not so separate from your daily life. And so you're learning how to be present in a mindful way with all your sense doors open. And we, the Vipassana people, don't learn how to do it with the eyes open, they say. However, there's plenty of opportunities in life to be mindful with the eyes open. And I don't think that it's such a big issue. Other questions? So I gave you the example of the elaborations of the mind, how the mind goes off in these chain of associated thoughts. And what happens for many of us is that our complex elaborations talk to each other. So I'm living in this phenomenal fantasy world, and you know that I've created. I've completely lost track of the fact that it started with a stain in the rug. And it all has to do with me and my suffering and my problems and all that. And then I perceive the world, and other people talk to my elaborations. My elaborations talk to themselves. And sometimes we're very lucky if we come back again to the primacy of our immediate experience. We get lost in our story making all too easily. So then before we do our first meditation today, I'll tell you another story, another example. And this is the football example. A good number of years ago now, I was watching football on television with two other meditation teachers, Vipassana teachers. And I don't watch football very much, so, you know, so it was kind of interesting for me, just the experience, and also unusual to do it with two other meditation teachers, Buddhist teachers, you know. And it was during a retreat. Made it more interesting. So we were sitting there watching this football game, and one of the teachers had the mute button, and when sensible people do, when the commercials came on, he pushed the mute button, and we talked together for a while. And then the football game came back on again, and he did not unmute the mute. So we stopped talking, we focused on the television, but we watched a silent football game on television. And since we were all supposed to be highly trained people in mindfulness, and I assumed that he understood, or he saw, I could perceive, he was mindful enough there was no sound coming out, so I didn't have to nudge him and remind him. So I thought, well, let's just leave it at that. This is interesting, this is an unusual experience, let's just investigate or pay attention to what this is like, which is very much a spirit of mindfulness. Let's discover something here, let's investigate, let's explore what's happening. So I sat there and watched the football game without any sound. And I could follow the game. The basic ideas of the game were pretty obvious. A bunch of men line up and they fall down. And I could see that pretty well. And every once in a while some guy would break free, and you kind of see him, you know, running down the field, you know, past these lines written across the field. And you knew he was going in the right direction, and it'd be a good thing if he came to the end zone. And so you're kind of hoping he would make it. And then some guy comes along from the back and grabs him, and he falls down. And he doesn't make it. And you say, oh, that's too bad. And so, fine. But then when my friend finally did turn the sound back on again, to me it was really dramatic, the difference between with the sound and without. Because with the sound, there was the sportscaster, the commentator, talking about the game. And sometimes it was kind of matter of fact. And sometimes there was a certain level of enthusiasm and excitement in his voice. And I suspect that part of the function of a sportscaster is to excite the audience, to get the audience into the game and involved. And in fact, I noticed that my excitement around the game increased when I could hear him speaking. And then it wasn't simply some guy running down the field for the goal, but I'd be standing in my, you know, I'd stand up out of my chair and say, go, you know, like I could help him along. I'm much more excited. However, the game is different from the commentary that the sportscaster is giving. However, in my normal experience of watching it, a normal football game, the the commentary and the game are entangled in how I perceive it of television. I don't see them as being different. And the whole experience is kind of seamless. It's kind of like entangled with itself. It's kind of like canned laughter on television. Often we don't notice the canned laughter is there, but it helps make the joke funnier, even though the joke's not very funny to begin with. There's extra things added as commentary that affects the way that we see and experience. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens in our own minds is we are expert commentators. We are constantly commenting on our experience, either on what's happening right now, or commentating about what happened in the past, what happened in the future, or what should happen in my fantasy. And because we often live in our commentary, we often get our commentary entangled with reality. So if we make some commentary about what's going on right now, then that commentary might not be what's really going on, but we don't necessarily see the difference. So one of the kind of maybe proverbial kind of examples is if someone shows up late for an appointment or for a date or something, and the person's maybe stood you up before and you've told them how important it is for them to show up, and they promise to show up on time next time and they don't show up. And so you're furious. How could that lousy, no good person one more time do such a terrible thing? This person's really disrespectful. And then you find out later that the person was trying to get there but was in a car accident, is okay but is in the hospital or something, you know. And then all your anger disappears and you realize that all your reaction was based on an interpretation of what was likely reason for the person not being there. But you didn't really know. And so rather than holding your commentary lightly, your interpretation lightly, you believed it quite tightly. You got entangled with the commentary, with the interpretation. So what we're trying to do in mindfulness is to begin separating out the commentary we make about life from our immediate experience of what life is like. And as we do this next meditation, you'll notice how easy it is for you to take up residence in your thinking, to begin inhabiting the world of commentary and ideas, as opposed to trying to stay with the simplicity of your felt sense experience, staying present for what's actually happening for you in the moment. Even if you're able to stay in the present moment, say you can stay with your breathing for a while, are you beginning to make commentary about your success or your failure in meditation? Wow, that was a great breath. I followed two breaths in a row now. I'm sure enlightenment is about to happen. Or, wow, I managed to get to two breaths, but then my mind wandered off. And then I came back and I did three breaths, but then my mind wandered off. Boy, I wonder how everybody else is doing in this room. Boy, I can't do this. I'm not really made for this. You know, I'm made for something else, maybe bowling. And so your mind has gotten involved with commentary. Your mind has gotten involved with interpretation. And it's maybe innocent enough in itself, but we tend to take up residence in it. We tend to live in that and see the world through those thoughts. And there's a possibility of not seeing something through our thoughts, but seeing something directly. And that's kind of the movement we're trying to do in mindfulness. Does that make enough sense? So, take a comfortable, upright, sitting posture. And if you're in the back and you have trouble hearing or seeing it, there's some space here on the side here in the front, if you want to move closer. And then gently close your eyes. And then pay a little bit of attention to your spine. And see if you can kind of lift up your spine, a little bit more erect and alive. Not so much straining to make it go up, but more like infusing it with some vitality. And then in a few moments, I'll ask you to take some long, slow, deep breaths. And as you exhale, Relax your body, your shoulders, your stomach, your chest, around that alert spine, as if the spine is a column from which everything else can hang. So then take a few long, slow, deep breaths deep into your body. And as you exhale, let go and relax. As you take a long, deep breath in, let that be a time where you connect to yourself from the inside. You connect to your physical self, reminding yourself that for the next meditation period, you're going to be here in this body, present for it. And then as you exhale, you relax into this body, into this place and time. And then you can let your breath return to normal. And there's no need to breathe any special way during the meditation time. But at the beginning of the meditation also, it's helpful to spend a couple of moments scanning your body to see if there's any parts of any muscles it might be easy to relax. So, for example, you might soften your forehead, your eyes, it might be possible to relax your jaws, your mouth, your face. Possible to soften the shoulders, the chest. And it's helpful for meditation if you can relax your belly. Let it be soft, hanging forward. If it tightens up again quickly, then don't worry about that, but if it's easy to relax, keep it soft. Let your breath travel down into your belly, relaxing your torso, sides of your torso, as you inhale. And then take a few moments to feel your entire body. However, whatever way your body presents itself to you right now, just feel a general panoramic sense of being in a body. Maybe a little bit curious what it feels like to explore, feel different parts of your body. noticing the difference between thinking about what you're attentive to and simply feeling it. And then within your body, as part of your body, become aware of your breathing. Become aware of how your body experiences the breathing. The expansion and contraction, the alternating sense of pressure and tension, tautness, release, relaxation, letting go. You can either feel the breath, the sense of breathing in the body and all over the body, the full torso, and or you can become aware of just one particular place where the body's experience of breathing is most pronounced. The belly moving, the chest rising and falling, the sensations of the air going in and out through the nostrils. Being a little bit curious about the experience of breathing. Investigating it, getting to know it better, what your particular way of breathing is like. Being careful not to get caught up in interpretations or judgments. Just the sensations of what it feels like is enough. If you have a lot of trouble feeling your breath, you can breathe just a little bit stronger than normal. But otherwise, don't make any special effort to breathe in any way. And the idea is to hang in there with the breathing, feeling the rhythm of how the sensations change. Breathing in and out and in and out. Each time you exhale, remembering to let go of your thoughts and concerns, relaxing. being attentive for when your mind starts getting lost in thought. Lost in the commentary. Then relaxing, letting go, and beginning again with the breathing. It doesn't matter how many times your mind wanders off. It only matters that you remember to come back and begin again. To begin again without any commentary or judgment. The experience of breathing in and out is a physical experience. It's a physical contact. Almost as if maybe you're getting a massage from the inside. And you want to stay there, keep your attention in a gentle, relaxed way. You want to try to keep your attention there for that point of contact, that physical experience of breathing. Letting the mind be relaxed. Perhaps that point of contact between awareness and the experience of breathing, it's kind of like the contact of a cork going up and down in the waves in the ocean. It stays on the surface of the water, but it goes up and down with each wave. So the awareness stays connected to the breathing. But expands and contracts, goes up and down with each breath. And now in the last minutes of this meditation, let go of paying attention to your breathing. No longer need to bring any attention there. But now instead, bring your attention to whatever happens to be the strongest physical sensation in your body. It doesn't have to be very strong, but whatever happens to be the strongest sensation. And in a very simple way, let your awareness or attention just settle there, as if that sensation is allowed to be there. Nothing needs to happen to it. You're just going to hold it in awareness. Be aware of it. Explore it. Get to know it a little bit better. Hang out with it. And then notice what your reaction is to that strong sensation. If it disappears, then find another one, another sensation. And notice if there's commentary about it, judgment, some emotional reaction to it. And perhaps you can see the difference between the reaction and the actual sensation. And if you can, see, just hang out with the sensation a little bit more. Look at it really closely, like with a microscope, as if you've never studied a sensation before. Get really close. What happens to it as you're present for it? And then you can let go of that sensation, let go of your sensations. And very simply, for another 30 seconds, go back to your breathing. And just rest there for 30 seconds in the breathing. There was a new meditation student who was being taught on retreat how to practice the mindfulness of breathing, and was taught just stay with the breath, to stay with the breath the best you can. And the student came to the teacher and said, and started talking about the thoughts and concerns and emotions that he was having, and the teacher looked at him and said, "It's none of your business what goes on in your mind." And it was such a relief to the student. All he had to do was, he didn't have to figure out anything, didn't have to figure out, you know, all kinds of wonderful things or difficult things, didn't have to solve all his psychological problems. He just had to stay with his breath. Just, that's all. It's none of your business what goes on up there in the mind. Isn't that nice? Some of you couldn't believe it. So it's possible to have meditation be very simple. And in some sense, the simpler you make it and allow it to be, developing concentration and focus on the breathing, it's very helpful and effective. Mindfulness practice, however, is meant to be a practice that applies to all aspects of our lives. It's bringing attention and awareness to everything in our life, not just one particular thing. And so for that reason, we expand the instructions to begin including other aspects of our life. So hopefully by the end of the 5 weeks, in a kind of shorthand way, you get a sense of how that your whole life is included with the scope of what you can bring this careful, mindful attention to of what happens in the present moment. After the breath, the most useful place to learn how to pay attention is with the rest of our body, our physical experience. Buddhist practice puts a tremendous emphasis on the body, on our physical body, and being in our body, being embodied. Many people are often very much in their heads. Their work is very often maybe involves thinking or analyzing or figuring. They spend a lot of time reading. They spend a lot of time fantasizing or carrying on conversations in their head. And many people get disconnected with their body. Some people do it because of just what the normal activity is in their head. And some people do it because to be in your body, for some people, is frightening. The body is the holder of our emotional life. And some people, their emotional life is too painful or too difficult to be present for. And so they shut down or they numb out parts of their body and they stay just kind of maybe above the neck or something. However, over and over again in Buddhist practice, the emphasis is come back into your body and begin living your life through your body, with your body. Include your body as part of the whole show. And in fact, in the teachings of the Buddha, the mind and the body are not considered to be separate, as they are in some Western traditions, where there's often a very sharp divide between them. So, and the body is the, in terms of the building blocks of how we build our lives, the body is at the very basis of that experience. It's with the physical experiences of perception, sensations in our body, that we begin building the elaborate world of our culture and our fantasies and our whatever we do. And so begin having a strong sense of being grounded in the basic building blocks of our experience. It gives us a lot of clarity and also, amazingly, a lot of freedom of how we negotiate our life through the complexities that we often have. The point of contact that we're trying to come to is very much related to our embodied experience. Our experience of the world happens through the body. Eyes, ears, touch, smell, taste, something else. And also in Buddhism we talk about that there's a kind of like a physical organ of perception in the mind that feels thoughts and feels our feelings and things like that. Thoughts and feelings, amazingly enough, can be felt as opposed to just kind of whatever, well, you know, as if, you know, like the virtual reality. So, in this last meditation we did any of you notice the difference between taking up residency in the commentary versus being present for the breath? Yeah? Some of you? Some of you didn't have an opportunity to think at all? You're so busy being with your breath. Did some of you feel frustrated that you couldn't stay with the breath very much? Some of you did? That's normal to feel frustrated. What I'd recommend you do is to appreciate that your best effort to stay present for the breath, if you can stay present for your breath, the fact that you're making your best effort will highlight for you what is actually going on for you. that will make it really clear that your mind's out of control or that your mind is preoccupied with certain concerns. And if you weren't trying to pay attention to the breath, you might not really see clearly the power of the mind, the busyness of the mind, the kind of concerns that preoccupy the mind. And so part of the function of breath meditation is to highlight what it is that makes it difficult to be present for the breath. So when it's difficult to be with the breath, don't take that as being a failure of the practice. Take it, say, it's actually, as it says in the newsletter, the practice is working anyway, because it's highlighting for you, making you more mindful, more awake to what's really going on for you, the currents of what's moving through your life. Does that make sense? And then at the very end, I asked you to switch and pay attention to some strong sensation in your body, or the strongest sensation in your body. What happened to some of you? Some of you, when you did that, you can report a little bit. What were you aware of? What happened to those sensations? What happened to your experience? Yes?
I had a pain in my back, and it slowly spread.
And as it spread, did it get less or diffuse? More intense? Mm-hmm. That could happen. Someone else? Yes.
An itching in my palm, and the intent, as I was paying attention to it, the intensity would vary, it would move around a little bit, and I caught myself imagining scratching it, and it was sort of neat to sort of see the difference between the imagining scratching it and then just sensing the itching. And then after you rang the bell, I went ahead and scratched, and I noticed that it was totally nothing like what I had imagined.
Not as satisfying? Our fantasies are more satisfying than our realities. Please.
Thank you. I have pain in my upper back, and when I concentrated on it, it started to go away. But I also felt judgment that I must not be sitting right, or you know, I must have bad posture or something, that my back would hurt. Such a short amount of time.
So this commentator was active.
But it did go away for a little bit when I concentrated on it.
There are three things that might happen when you concentrate on strong sensations. They might go away. They might lessen, go away. They might get stronger and explode. Or they might stay the same. And I say that because in case you had some idea that it's supposed to be only one way. You know, what we're trying to do here is not to make something happen to our sensations. We're trying to study what happens to them. We're trying to develop our mindfulness to get out of the way, in a sense, and just feel what's going on. However, one of the things we tend to notice then in that process is our reactions to it. And our judgments, our aversions, our desires, our holding on, our fantasies and all that. And that becomes a very important part of mindfulness, is to start becoming aware of the reactions we have to something as simple as a physical sensation. The world of our reactions is where the world of suffering begins, at least in the way Buddhists understand suffering. Buddhists define suffering as the discomfort that we create in contracting or resisting or pushing away or getting in some way our experience. We somehow don't want to accept the experience, we push it away, we like it a lot, we accept it, we want to hold on to it and not let it disappear. We cringe, we contract, we get full of hate, aversion, fear. We react in some way. And it's what we do to the experience. It's what we do. So, for example, if you're driving along Highway 101 at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and it's rush hour traffic and you're feeling really impatient, really angry with all the traffic and the people who are cutting you off, and you're late for an appointment and you're really getting more and more angry, is it the traffic that is causing you to feel such discomfort? And some of you might be very happy to blame the traffic. However, if you take a very honest look at where the genesis is for that kind of suffering, it's really not in the traffic. The traffic is the condition for the suffering. But the source of the suffering really is the way that you react to the suffering, to the traffic. Your judgments, your impatience, your aversion to it. I've been in rush hour traffic stuck and late for appointments and been furious and impatient. And I've also been in the same kind of traffic and very peaceful and content, just looking at the sky and looking at the other drivers and kind of amazed that here we are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, pretty content. There's a wide range of options of how a human being responds to any given situation. And we have some choice about that response. If we can begin seeing clearly that the world of reaction is different than the actual experience, we can see the place where there might be some choice. So if you can see, for example, where there's some judgment, and the judgment not the same thing as having a back pain, then it might be possible to not take the judgment so seriously. To say, oh, you know, judgments come and go, they're cheap, dime a dozen, and you know, not be so caught up in it. So our physical experience, our embodied experience, is a very important part of Buddhist practice. Yet last week I talked a little bit about taking a good meditation posture, and I'd like to repeat that today, that it's actually valuable to take a conscious posture where you're sitting upright and alert, a posture that expresses some alertness. So you're doing something with your body which expresses alertness. If you just kind of sit down in a chair like a couch potato in order to meditate, you might be able to get calm and concentrated and all that. But you're kind of leaving your body out of the equation. And what we want to do is include our body as part of our lived life. And it's very powerful to begin doing that through meditation by taking an alert posture as you meditate. And for those of you who don't need to use a backrest, I strongly encourage you not to use one. If you have to, that's completely fine. Then I encourage you to use it. The basic instructions for mindfulness practice at this point is stay with the breath the best you can until some physical sensation in your body becomes more compelling than the breathing. Then let go of the breath entirely. You don't have to focus on it anymore at all. And then bring your meditative attention on that sensation, to be present for that physical sensation. Meditative attention means an attention that allows it to be there. An attention which doesn't want it to be different, doesn't try to fix it or make it go away or make it get stronger, but simply gives it permission to be there. And you just bring your attention very carefully to feel it and be present for it. Almost as if awareness is kind of like a soft cloud or soft cotton candy that kind of goes down, just settles around that sensation. It can be a strong uncomfortable sensation. It can be a strong pleasant sensation. There can be a lot of strong pleasant sensations that arise in meditation. If it becomes more pronounced than your breathing, then that becomes what we pay attention to. And you stay with it and just meditate. That becomes the place of concentration. Stay with it, explore it. The mind wanders off. You come back to that. It changes into something else. You follow the changes. If some other physical sensation becomes even stronger than the first physical sensation, you let go of the first one, and you follow whatever is the strongest. That's kind of the guideline. Whatever is the strongest sensation in the present moment, that's the place where you practice waking up and being present as the anchor to keep you in the present moment. If a strong sensation in your body disappears or is no longer compelling, then you come back to your breathing. And very, very simply come back to your breath. While you're staying with the physical sensation, you certainly want to allow it to be there, but you also want to begin exploring it, getting to know it better. Don't take it for granted as if you know what it is, but see if you can get closer into it, inside of it. Really feel it. Become attentive to the reactions and the commentary you have to it, and the way the reaction, the commentary, keeps you apart from it. And perhaps if it's easy, you can let go of the commentary, the thoughts, the judgments. And if it's not easy, at least to kind of bracket them, kind of leave them in the background, and let, you know, it's none of your business. And let you kind of put your full attention as best you can into the physical sensations, physical experience. And the physical experience can also include sounds, any of the sense doors, actually. So if a loud sound occurs in while you're meditating, don't think of that sound as a distraction. It's just something else to pay attention to, something else for your meditation to include. So if your neighbor's dog starts barking really loudly, some meditators will think of that as a distraction. But for mindfulness students, it just, that becomes the pronounced experience, the most predominant experience of the moment. Then we do listening meditation. We listen to the sound, hearing. Yes?
There used to be a dog that barked when we were in here. And now I miss it because I don't hear it anymore. They got rid of it.
So it can be just listening for a while it's pronounced, and if mind wanders off, come back to listening if that's still pronounced. A great aid, great help to keeping the mindfulness present is to maintain a very slow, calm, steady labeling of your experience as it's happening. And labeling is not the same thing as commentary. It's using a single word to name what your experience is, as a way of keeping you present. So rather than having your thoughts kind of wander off anywhere they want, it's using a very simple rudimentary thought to point you back to your experience so you can feel it more carefully. It's like a pointer saying. So when you're breathing, you might be naming it in for the in-breath, out, or some people do rising, falling. And then if there's suddenly a strong sensation in your knee, you might name it pain. And you name it pain just calmly in a kind of simple way, as long as it's there, just name it pain. Then the dog barks, and you might name it, listening or hearing. You don't necessarily have to analyze what it is when you hear a sound. Just label it hearing to encourage you to be present there at the ears. If it is, so just naming it is very, very helpful. And I'll talk more about that next week. It can help the mind become quieter if it has something to do while you're being present. Some people who've done other meditation practices find that this labeling to be a little bit hard to do at first because it's kind of like they're so used to their mind being quiet or not doing anything in meditation, that it's kind of awkward to begin doing something like this. It seems like a very coarse and agitated thing to do. But most people will find that if you do it for a while, they become smooth and easier and kind of second nature, and really becomes a great help to developing concentration and presence. Some people it never really works for, and you don't have to do the naming, but you might try it, at least for this period of the introductory course. You might find that it really helps you a lot. It also helps keep you honest, because it's very easy to kind of think you're present for your breath or whatever, but your mind is really off somewhere else. But then you notice, I'm not doing my naming anymore. And I stopped doing it. And then, well, I'm not really present then, am I? So it has its benefits. Any questions about any of that? Yes, please.
Gil, do you think it's wise to tolerate anything that happens during meditation? For example, sometimes when I meditate, the leaf blowers come around and it lasts for about 15 minutes. And I'm sensitive to sound anyway, so it really bothers me immensely. So I try to just name that and name the irritation that goes with it and try to let go of it. And it's really difficult.
Uh-huh.
Is it a good idea to just sort of tolerate that sort of thing?
It depends a lot on what you feel the consequences are going to be. So you have to have some sense or some reflection of what the consequences might be, or from past experience or whatever. And if you find that in an experience like that, that it just winds you up, and you get more and more distraught and more upset and ready to write to City Hall or do all kinds of things, you know, really upset, then maybe it's not so useful to be present for it. And maybe you want to just stop if you're winding yourself up. Or it's kind of being counterproductive that way. However, we human beings often will claim something's not working when what's happening is it's simply uncomfortable. So it's kind of a way of avoidance. And so one of the principles of mindfulness is to try the best we can to stay present for whatever arises. To use your word, tolerate whatever arises within reason. And that 15 minutes of listening to the leaf blower might not be very pleasant meditation, but it might be very useful for you. Because in doing that, you might notice all the ways in you react, all the aversion, all the whatever's going on inside of you that's making a difficult experience. It's possible that if you dropped all the reactivity, that it's still intense and maybe even uncomfortable, but it's completely fine. You can actually be completely peaceful and have this unpleasant experience come through you. So, for example, physical pain is a common experience. People meditate. Sooner or later, they have some physical pain. And if you run away from it, that's fine. Then you won't have physical pain, which maybe that's all you think. That's fine, right? But you losing an opportunity to learn how to develop equanimity and peacefulness, a calm heart, with physical pain. And I've sat with intense physical pain and had my mind be completely peace and actually have joyful mind while that pain is there. And I've also had the opposite. But I know the opposite comes from my getting entangled with the experience. And when I can disentangle myself from the experience through my mindfulness and by studying it, investigating it, then I can find a place of being there equanimously. So you might kind of experiment a little bit, and after experimenting a few times, you can find that it's just, you know, a disaster. Then maybe don't meditate when the leaf blowers come. Yes?
Finding yourself stuck in a situation where you have sounds that are bothersome. This story reminded me of a year or so ago. I was in a situation where I found myself having an MRI. And I had heard that it was pretty claustrophobic and noisy. But then someone said, well, it's okay now to give you a tranquilizer. But they didn't give me any tranquilizer. They put me in there and I saw the thing right up over my nose, the roof of it. And then the banging started. And I was just on the verge of completely flipping out. So I thought, I'll meditate. And I'll meditate on sounds. And I must say, I got through that okay. And I don't know if I can learn how to do that. I think it might have been the worst little period of my whole life. But no, I just meditated on the sounds.
Beautiful. So you had an alternative to getting lost in your thoughts and your reactions. And the alternative was to come back to this very simple beginning of contact with something very concrete in the moment, the sounds. Beautiful. Okay. Yes, please.
Sometimes when I have trouble concentrating on the breathing, I start to breathe a little deeper in order to focus better. But then sometimes I'll try to visualize where the breath, how the breath is going in and where it's going. I was wondering if that's actually commentary by trying to visualize.
Very, very, I'm very glad you asked. Some people think more in thoughts and some people more in images. And certainly you can visualize also. But that is a kind of a commentary. It's kind of thought. And it keeps you, even though it might keep you more present, it also keeps you separate from the direct experience. And what we're trying to do is to actually sense and feel the immediate experience as it is itself, and not be present for it through the filter of a thought or through the filter of a visualization. So even if you can stay present but you're visualizing it, let go of the visualization if you can. And the first thing you said was... breathing a little bit deeply. Generally, we don't recommend that because what we're trying to do in mindfulness is to work with who we are. as opposed to trying to kind of get around, kind of bypass who we are. So if you're the kind of person who is a little bit distracted and not able to stay very present for your breathing, then we work with how you actually are. And so you try your best to be present for your breath as you are, rather than having any kind of props to help you along. And then what you're doing then is you're actually, you understand, you're working with yourself. You understand yourself, you understand your forces of distraction. You're directly trying to use the mind to overcome the distraction, as opposed to using some physical prop by breathing more deeply. Yes, please, in the back.
And how to differentiate dullness and meditative stability, because sometimes I think I'm just being sedated in a very restful state.
That's a good point. So one way to know a difference is that if you're being sedated, the tendency is for us to become sleepy or fall asleep. Another is the mind becomes kind of cloudy and vague. We don't see very clearly what's actually going on. Some people, when they meditate, think that meditation is about, what they want it to be about, is becoming calm. And so they're kind of soothing themselves with the breath. They're soothing themselves into a calm state, and they're kind of leaning, in a sense, into the calmness or into... And if you do that, it's a little bit hard to see a difference between a stable, concentrated mind and a dull mind. But in mindfulness, we're not leaning into it. We're not trying to make ourselves calm. But rather what we're trying to do is make ourselves alert to what's actually going on, to see clearly what's going on. So if your emphasis is on seeing clearly, I think you start noticing when you're not seeing so clearly, when the mind is getting kind of dull. Does that make some sense? Does that make sense in your experience, what I said?
It makes sense that since I meditate with eyes open, sometimes it blurs the vision and I thought I see something that wasn't there, or just complete different pictures.
If you're meditating with your eyes open and have that kind of experience with your eyes, then probably what you should do is really come back to your breathing and relax your breathing. It might be that if you relax your breathing at that point, that your vision problems will go away. So let's end with a short sitting. And begin by taking a couple of deep breaths, letting go. And then breathing normally. Relaxing some of the muscles in your body. It's easy to do. And then bring your attention to your head, to the inside of your head, the area of your brain, between your ears, behind your forehead. And just take a few moments to explore and feel what that area, what it feels like to you. You might feel just some dull vibration or pressure. You might feel nothing. Just kind of feel that area, be present for it, explore it. And then, as if the brain is a muscle, on the next exhalation, relax the brain. And then allow the sounds around you to come into your head. Doing a few moments now of listening meditation. There are no right or wrong sounds. Just allow yourself to receive the sounds. If your mind goes off in thought, relax the thinking and come back to listening. What's nice about sounds is you can't control the next sound that's going to come. Allow your mind to be relaxed, receptive to sounds. And now letting go of listening, open your attention to feel the sensations of your body in whatever way those sensations want to show themselves. There are no right or wrong sensations. They arise and pass. Some stay longer, some pass away quickly. As if your whole body is an organ of awareness. Allow the sensations to appear whatever way they want. And now letting go of the whole body. Become aware of your breathing, the sensations of breathing, any way those sensations want to show themselves. As if your awareness is a large screen. And those sensations of breathing arise and pass on that screen whatever way they want. No right or wrong. And then letting your attention settle into some particular place where you feel the breathing. Maybe the place you feel it most predominantly. The nostrils, the chest, the belly. And allowing the sensations in that particular area to rise and pass in whatever way they want. Letting go of your thoughts, just receiving those sensations. It might help you to stay present, to label the breath as you breathe. Each time your mind wanders off in thought, you notice that and you come back again to your breathing. Each time you go through that process, your body, your mind is learning a little bit better to differentiate between being lost in thought and being free of it. Your body and mind is learning the skill of letting go. You'll have to learn, go through this process over and over and over again until you really learn this well. Don't take your distractions, your distracting thoughts, as being a hindrance to the process, but actually some of the necessary food that develops your ability to pay attention, to let go. And then when I ring the bell to end the sitting, before you open your eyes, you can take a couple of slow, long, deep breaths. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So a few brief things. One is that I did bring a handout for this for today, and probably some more back there on the chair. And if there's not enough, then I apologize. There'll be more next week. And there are some exercises on those handouts, and I'd encourage you to try them out. You might find them to be fun and interesting to do them. A couple of the upcoming events you might like to know about, and that is that this coming Saturday there's a one-day workshop by Joanna Macy. She's one of the leading Buddhist ecologists. She's a kind of philosopher and wonderful thinker and fantastic, wonderful Buddhist teacher in her own right. And she's going to do a day-long class on Buddhism and ecology. She's a very, very strong, powerful woman, and it's a wonderful privilege to be with her and around her and experience her. And if you're interested in that, there's flyers for that out on the table and telling you more about it. At the end of the month, the last Saturday of the month, I'm teaching a one-day retreat down the street at St. Mark's, and that information is in the newsletter, which is on the table. And some of you, especially some of you who have gone through the introductory course before, but even if you haven't, might find it interesting to come. It'll be a day spent on mindfulness of breathing, the whole day doing different kind of meditations, exercises on the breath as a way of, it's a silent retreat, but there'll be some guided meditations on the breath and some instructions on the breath to help people get really stabilized on this very important foundation of mindfulness meditation. Steve Gassner, who's sitting there in his chair there, he's going to be available now in the library for the next half an hour or so. If anybody would like to stay behind and talk to someone who's a senior student of our sitting group and had lots of experience in meditation, and would like to talk about any questions they might have, in case I'm intimidating to ask questions of, or any, you know, just would like to talk to someone or ask questions about our sitting group or whatever, Steve will be in the library. And the class is being done on a donation basis, which means you can freely do whatever you'd like in terms of donation. However, there's two baskets and in the hallway, and the recommendation, suggestion is that for the rent, Donna, to pay for the room and a few other expenses, you make a donation of $1 or $2 each. And the suggestion for the teacher, Donna, is $10 per class. But it's really up to you as you wish. So I wish you all well and a happy week, and I hope you find the practice and the exercises interesting.